WBPVLP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. This is Johannes Werner with your WSLR News headlines for Wednesday, January 28th. Vern Buchanan is dropping out. After 2 decades representing first Sarasota, then Manatee in the U.S. Congress, the vice chair of the powerful House Ways and Means Committee announced he will be retiring and not seek re-election this year. Buchanan's move comes just 2 months after a Donald Trump endorsement. His retirement leaves Florida's 16th congressional district, covering Manatee County and a portion of Hillsborough County, wide open. With Republican candidates now expected to run for the post, this is already a crowded field. 3 Democrats and 2 non-party affiliated candidates have filed so far. They include repeat candidate Jan Schneider, Glenn Pearson, a former TV news producer, reporter, and anchor, and John Harris, a reserve officer and cybersecurity expert working for the U.S. Special Operations Command. Mark Davis runs as an independent. He raised his profile when he heckled Ron DeSantis in July during an appearance in Bradenton, and sheriff's deputies led him away from the governor's press conference. In other election news, whistleblower Alexander Vindman filed to run for the U.S. Senate seat in Florida currently held by Ashley Moody. The retired Army Lieutenant Colonel was a top witness in Donald Trump's first impeachment trial. He was fired by Trump in 2020. Moody is facing her first election after she was appointed by the governor to replace Marco Rubio when he became Secretary of State. Manatee County is partnering with the state to preserve nearly 1,500 acres of farmland. The county commissioners yesterday voted unanimously to join the Florida Department of Agriculture in buying the protection easements of 2 cattle ranches in the East County under the Rural and Family Lands Protection Program. They include the 1,000-acre Thundercloud Ranch and the 450-acre Mossy Island Ranch. The program is designed to allow landowners to continue farming. The county's contribution to the easement purchase is capped at $2 million. The U.S. population grew last year at one of the slowest rates in history. That's according to new numbers released yesterday by the Census Bureau, covering the period from July 2024 to July 2025. This is in large part due to immigration numbers, which plunged by more than 50% from the previous year. Florida, which has had one of the highest rates of domestic inward migration, saw a sharp slowdown in the latest period. This has been Johannes Werner with your WSLR News headlines for Wednesday, January 28th.
Good morning. Welcome to the Peace and Justice Report right here on your own community radio station, WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton. And my name is Bob Connors. And before I begin, I'd like to mention that support for WSLR comes from listeners like you and from Manatee Spirit Holistic Sound Studio, offering sound-based wellness experiences in Bradenton. More information is available at 941-201-0069 or info@manateespirit.com. And I have David Young in the studio with me. David, thanks for coming in, making sure we go out on the air today.
Bob, good to see you again. Hope you're doing well.
Thank you. Yes, nothing like this nice cold air. The great thing about it being cold here is you know it's not going to be around that long. And when you think about 40, 50 degrees and the sun out, people in other parts of the country would die for that weather in the wintertime. So it feels good. Feels good. So, David, I've had a guest on the Peace and Justice Report a couple of times over the last 5 years, and his name is Roy Idelson. And I'm just going to read a brief bio. I wasn't able to get in touch with Roy. I found a talk that he had given back in September of this past year, 2005. And I wanted to get him on the air to talk about the presentation he gave to a psychologist. Let me tell you a little bit about him. He's the past president of the Society for the Study of Peace, Conflict, and Violence, Division 48 of the American Psychological Association. He's a member of the Coalition for an Ethical Psychology, a past president of Psychologists for Social Responsibility, and the former executive director of the Solomon Asch Center for Study of Ethno-Political Conflict at University of Pennsylvania. And he's been on Democracy Now! A few times. I've had him on to talk about Guantanamo Bay and the psychological effects of being locked up in confinement for many, many years, especially when you're innocent. That even makes it that much worse. But considering I wasn't able to get in touch, I think Roy's probably in a warm weather location and did not respond to my email or my voicemail. So I'm playing about 15 or 16 minutes off of this presentation he gave back in September. And I'm just going to go ahead and I'm going to give you the title of the presentation so you know what we're talking about. It's talking to psychologists. We must not look away. Resisting oppression and pursuing justice. So, David, could you click on that and make sure it's coming through with the internet?
I think we got it, Bob.
We are meeting today amid an alarming constellation of global trends, including the burgeoning repression of human rights, escalating threats to vulnerable groups, and the rise of authoritarian leaders who seemingly take pleasure in the pain, cruelty, and humiliation they inflict on those they deem to be lesser, disposable, and exploitable for political and financial gain. Almost 60 years ago, one of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr.'s final speeches, just months before his assassination, was at the APA convention in 1967. In part, he told the assembled psychologists this, quote, "On some positions, cowardice asks the question, is it safe? Expediency asks the question, is it politic? Vanity asks the question, is it popular? But conscience must ask the question, is it right? And there comes a time when one must take a stand that is neither safe nor politic nor popular, but one must take it because it is right," unquote. 2 years earlier, in 1965, Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel was among those who marched arm in arm with Dr. King from Selma to Montgomery, Alabama, across the Edmund Pettus Bridge, advocating for voting rights for Black Americans. Back then, Heschel reminded us that in a free society, few are guilty, but all are responsible. In my view, we cannot take righteous stands or honor our responsibilities to others as citizens and as psychologists in this country if we look away from the devastation unfolding in so many critical areas where psychological principles, research, ethics, and practice apply. Consider these examples. The heartless offensive against the right to health care, including cuts to Medicaid, misinformation about vaccines, and the defunding of medical research. The racism-fueled attacks on the principles and policies of diversity, equity, and inclusion, which will subvert progress for greater opportunity for marginalized and disadvantaged groups. The implementation of a cruel and brutal program of mass deportations, one that traumatizes immigrants while tearing apart families and futures. The reckless, greed-driven, let-it-all-burn onslaught on the environment, denying climate change, accelerating pollution, and abandoning conservation. the pursuit of restrictions on voting rights that will deprive millions of the opportunity to fully participate in elections that are central to the preservation of democracy itself. The contemptible assault on the LGBTQ community, especially transgender individuals, by denying them appropriate medical treatment and the right to live their lives fully and authentically. The imposition of draconian restrictions on reproductive rights, including the further curtailing of access to abortion, contraception, and relevant educational resources. The tyrannical assault on our education system and on support for the free inquiry and independent scholarship that are foundational to our institutions of higher learning. Crackdowns against students and faculty who nonviolently exercise their free speech rights in an effort to defend vulnerable communities here and around the world. The strangling of funding for scientific research, the gold standard for advancing knowledge as a means to alleviate suffering and improve the quality of life for millions. The authoritarian discrediting of judges, intimidation of law firms, noncompliance with court orders, and targeting of political adversaries, all undermining our legal system. The autocratic offensive against the press and media that will deprive people of access to valuable independent reporting and educational programming. Oppressive attacks on the welfare of workers, including instituting mass layoffs, denying them the benefits of unionization, and subjecting them to unfair labor practices. And the disruption of trust and cooperation with international allies and institutions, thereby threatening crucial treaties, blocking access to humanitarian aid, and encouraging heightened militarism and lawlessness around the globe. The sources of distress and injustice I've highlighted demonstrate the breadth and depth of the current onslaught against values and priorities that psychologists, and certainly peace psychologists, hold dear. So when I say we must not look away, I mean we must not look away from the carnage, from the victims, from the perpetrators, from the lies that cause the victims to become victims and enable the perpetrators to continue being perpetrators, from the sources of impunity, and from the greed and self-interest that propel so much of what's wrong today. Anyone who has not been looking away for the past 23 months will realize that all of these markers have been part of Israel's assault on the Palestinian people in Gaza ever since the Hamas-led attacks in Israel on October 7th, 2023, when almost 1,200 civilians and soldiers were killed and 250 were taken hostage. No account of what I say here today can legitimately claim that I failed to acknowledge or condemn the atrocities committed that day, or that I chose to minimize the horrors and the deep and lasting fear and trauma they have caused so many. I acknowledge them, I condemn them, and I do not minimize them. But I do not pretend that the Palestinian people haven't suffered under a dehumanizing system of apartheid and an immiserating, unlawful occupation for decades. Almost 60 years ago, immediately after the 1967 Six-Day War, Amos Oz, the distinguished Israeli author and intellectual, wrote, quote, "Even an enlightened and humane and liberal occupation is an occupation. I fear for the quality of the seeds we sow in the near future in the hearts of the occupied. More than that, I fear for the seed that is being sown in the heart of the occupiers, and the first signs are already recognizable now." I also do not avoid the term genocide in describing Israel's unconscionable response to October 7th. Far more authoritatively, neither do an overwhelming and steadily increasing number of distinguished genocide scholars and human rights groups. One of those scholars is Israeli-American historian and former IDF soldier Omar Bartov. Earlier this summer, he wrote in the New York Times, quote, "My inescapable conclusion has become that Israel is committing genocide against the Palestinian people," unquote. So, as tragic and nightmarish violence overtakes so many regions of the world today, from Sudan to Ukraine to Myanmar to Kashmir and well beyond, some may sincerely ask why, as a peace psychologist, I choose to bring heightened attention to Israel and Palestine in particular. I want to offer five specific reasons, but before doing so, I'll note that because of some unique and deeply disturbing dynamics, which I'll describe shortly, in my opinion, it is Israel and Palestine that confront the American Psychological Association with both its greatest challenge and its most significant moral test today. Now, my five reasons. First, consider that the United Nations International Children's Emergency Fund, UNICEF, has called Gaza the most dangerous place in the world to be a child. More than 17,000 children, 1,000 under the age of 1 year, have been killed there over the past 23 months of unrelenting assault by the so-called Israel Defense Forces. From bullets, from bombs, from disease, and from being starved to death. If I took only 10 seconds to name each of these children, it would take me two full days, 48 hours, and even then most of us, including me, would only know their names, not who they were, not what they liked, not who they loved and who loved them, and not who or what they dreamed of becoming. So let's remember what James Baldwin, the renowned critic of race relations in this country, wrote almost a half century ago. Quote, "The children are always ours, every single one of them, all over the globe, and I am beginning to suspect that whoever is incapable of recognizing this may be incapable of morality," unquote. My second reason, because as a Jew, I've been taught that to save a single life is to save an entire world. Of course, Israel didn't build this core tenet of the Jewish faith into its high-tech lavender and where's daddy AI systems, which are designed to track targets and then bomb them after they've entered their homes, wiping out entire families. And that tenet just as obviously has been lost on the IDF soldiers who have reportedly gunned down desperate parents at undersupplied and overwhelmed emergency food distribution sites in Gaza. In contrast, someone who does understand this principle is Palestinian poet Rasha Abdulhadi. She has written, quote, "Wherever you are, whatever sand you can throw on the gears of genocide, do it now. If it's a handful, throw it. If it's a fingernail full, scrape it out and throw. Get in the way however you can. The elimination of the Palestinian people is not inevitable. We can refuse with our every breath and action. We must," unquote. And there is this, excuse me, from Jewish Israeli historian Yuval Harari, quote, "Judaism never faced a catastrophe like we are dealing with right now. which is a spiritual catastrophe for Judaism itself. Because what is happening right now in Israel could basically, I think, destroy, void, 2,000 years of Jewish thinking and culture and existence, unquote. My third reason, because in important ways, what has happened and is happening in Gaza and the West Bank is a microcosm of so much that's profoundly wrong today. That's why it's central to movements for social justice and liberation around the world. Francesca Albanese, the courageous UN Special Rapporteur on the situation of human rights in the Palestinian territories occupied since 1967, has described this better than I can, writing, "Palestine is a mirror held up to the world's moral and political failures." And so has American political activist, professor, and author Angela Davis, who has said, "We deposit our dreams in Palestine." My fourth reason, because this country, the United States, and both of its major political parties have been so thoroughly and calamitously complicit in the genocide. How? By providing political and diplomatic cover in vetoing any number of UN Security Council ceasefire resolutions, and by providing Israel with billions of dollars of munitions, despite compelling evidence that these weapons are being used indiscriminately against civilians in violation of U.S. and international law. Crystal Tuboles, the executive director of Honor the Earth, has noted with bitter irony that the military weaponry the United States provides to Israel includes Apache and Black Hawk helicopters, named after indigenous peoples that were subjected to genocide in this country. Meanwhile, the U.S. mainstream media doesn't deserve a free pass. It certainly bears significant responsibility as well. And my fifth reason, because as psychologists, most of us have core commitments to providing health care or education or both. And Israel's assault on Gaza has specifically and intentionally destroyed these essential elements for society's survival. As psychologists, we should be horrified by the deliberate destruction of Gaza's healthcare facilities and the targeting of healthcare personnel, with over 1,000 already killed. And as psychologists, we should be similarly distraught over the systematic destruction of Gaza's educational institutions. Nearly all of them have been damaged or destroyed, including all 12 universities. And hundreds of Palestinian educators and scholars have been killed. I want to pause for a moment here to say that I've learned so much from the courage of those individuals and groups who have refused to be silent about this genocide, including some colleagues here today, young and older, despite the risks they face. I am committed to speaking out too, as someone blessed with many.
That was Roy Idelson. Now, I want to direct you to his website and spell his last name. His last name is Idelson, E-I-D-E-L-S-O-N, E-I-D-E-L-S-O-N, Roy. So his website is royidelson.com. And you can read all about him. And that particular video that I played, I stopped at about the 15-minute mark, 16 minutes, but it goes on for another 30 minutes or so. So you can pull him up on the Internet. You know where you find videos on the Internet. Just put in Roy Idelson, and you will find that video. It's from September of 2025. And, David, you'd like to share something with the audience. We didn't let them know earlier.
Yeah, Bob, all I have to say are the views and opinions expressed by hosts. Excuse me, don't even have a voice. The views and opinions expressed by host, guests, and callers on WSLR programs are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of WSLR, its staff, or its volunteers.
Thank you, David. And I know people might disagree with Roy and what his thoughts are around the genocide and maybe a few other subjects that he brought up. And I have a second guest coming on in just a few minutes. I'd like to read a brief bio of the second guest. And her name is Alice Slater. She's a member of the board of directors of World Beyond War. She is based in New York City. She is a UN NGO representative of the Nuclear Age Peace Foundation. She is on the board of the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space, the Global Council of Abolition 2000, and the advisory board of the Nuclear Ban U.S., supporting the mission of the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons, which won the 2017 Nobel Peace Prize for its work in realizing the successful UN negotiations for a treaty for the prohibition of nuclear weapons. So she's been an activist dating back to Eugene McCarthy's presidential challenge to Lyndon Johnson's illegal war in Vietnam. So she's been around for a while, and I'm going to get her on the line here in just a minute. But I'd like to play something by Emma's Revolution that I've played many times in the past. Peace, shalom, shalom. And I'll be back with Alice Slater
peace,
in
shalom,
just a minute.
Shalom.
You're listening to the Peace and Justice Report right
peace,
here on your own
shalom,
community radio
shalom.
Station, WSLR 96.5
LPFM shalom,
in Sarasota, WBPV 100.1 LPFM
shalom.
In Bradenton. Revolution. I had gave you a brief bio of my second guest, Alice Slater. Are you there, Alice?
Yes. Hello. Good morning.
It's a little low. I don't know if you might have your volume down.
I'm here.
I have you down. Let me see. Let me check. Yeah, it might be my volume. No, my volume's up.
I'm looking at my volume.
Yeah, my volume's up. So I'm hoping it's her volume. Well, hold a second. Let's see if she comes on right now, just so.
I'm just looking at the volume. Well, I'll turn it up. Okay, it's up now. Is that better?
Okay. Well, yeah. Why don't you put on? Who's that? Is that
Joan Baez?
Joan Baez, yeah, We Shall Overcome. And then I'll unplug this. Now, I was able to hear you. Go ahead and speak now.
We shall overcome.
Yeah, I can hear you just fine without being plugged in. She's coming through.
It was my computer.
Oh, great, great, great. It's playing, right? You can.
In my heart, I do believe we shall overcome some.
Alice, your volume's okay now? Let's hear.
I think so. Is it all right?
I don't know.
One, two, testing, one, two.
I had read a piece that you had written several months back on the 80th anniversary of the ending of World War II. So why don't you just go ahead and tell the listeners about the piece you had written?
Right. I'm very concerned because China and Russia made this incredible proposal on the anniversary of World War II, the 80th anniversary, a joint proposal in which they begged us to pick up negotiations on a draft treaty they've been proposing in the United Nations since 2014 to ban weapons and war in space. And they also pledged never to be the first nations to put weapons of war in space. And our country is now looking at this golden dome for over $1 trillion. I mean, it's so insane. And nobody's talking about it. Our media is so corrupt. They are so in bed with the corporations that they don't report this. I mean, I'm writing it on, you know, liberal blogs and peace magazines are writing about it, but nobody knows about it generally. Even the so-called arms control community. I mean, the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists just released their Gloomsday report yesterday. You know, every year the Bulletin, which was founded by Albert Einstein, evaluates the risk of nuclear war on the planet. And they keep getting closer to midnight. So like this year, it's like seconds to midnight. Last year was minutes. And one of the things they talk about is the dangers of the Golden Dome, but they don't talk about Russia and China's offer. I can't believe it. And then I spoke to Bill Hartung. He's a great peace writer on the military production and the waste of money for military. And he said, well, people don't trust Russia and China, but you don't have to trust somebody if they say, let's talk about a treaty. You should at least talk to them and see whether they're serious. If they're not serious, nothing lost. But I must say, in my life as an activist and getting particularly involved in nuclear issues, it's always the United States. There used to be a comic strip in the 1950s, Pogo Possum, during the Red Scare, the first Red Scare. I mean, we're in the second Red Scare now. And they had a line that became very famous. We met the enemy and he is us. And this has been going back from the beginning when Truman and Stalin negotiated to form the United Nations to end the scourge of war. And the first resolution was for nuclear disarmament because we had just bombed the Nagasaki and Hiroshima. Stalin said to Truman, turn the bomb over to the UN, put it under UN control. We said no. So Russia got the bomb. You know, Gorbachev said to Reagan, when he let go of all of Eastern Europe and the wall came down, you know, he said, let's get rid of our nuclear weapons. Reagan said, great idea. You know, they were negotiating. They were friends now. So Gorbachev said, but don't do Star Wars, because we had a military doctrine to dominate and control the military use of space. And Reagan said, I can't give up Star Wars. So Gorbachev said, forget about it. You know, so that's where we are. I don't know why we're not picking. Why isn't the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists picking up on it? You know, why don't they even talk about it? Talking about the dangers, but what about the possibilities? The fact that we walked out of the anti-ballistic missile treaty and put missiles in Russia and Poland, you know, in Romania and Poland, right on, you know, right near. This is, we had that treaty since 1972 not to do that. We each had one missile base. We had one in North Dakota and they had one in Moscow. And we weren't going to build anti-missiles so that we didn't have to keep building more missiles. It was a terrific U.S.-Soviet agreement. Bush walked out of it. It was a 1972 agreement. And Obama and Trump put missiles in Romania and in Poland. And we keep nuclear weapons in five NATO countries. The U.S. has nuclear weapons in Germany, Italy, Holland, Belgium, and Turkey. And Russia never had them outside of their country. They just put them in Belarus during this Ukraine war. And even the way we talk about the Ukraine war is totally insane. When Reagan and Gorbachev negotiated, Gorbachev was terrified of a unified Germany in NATO because they lost 27 million people. Who even hears this number? I was so scared of communists and grew up with the Red Scare. And when I got active and went to the Soviet Union on nuclear disarmament missions, I was so shocked to hear this. And every guy is over 60 was walking around with his World War II medals on. And you go to the Leningrad Cemetery, it was like 500,000 mass graves from the Nazi seat. And you know what I learned a month ago? I'm 87 years old. China lost 33 million people to the Japanese. So we know this. We're arming the Japanese. They're in our nuclear umbrella. We're putting bases around them. We're making them the enemy, and we are the enemy. It's sad. It's very sad because I'm an American. I always love America, you know, and I think America's. But, I mean, look what's going on now. We're reaping the whirlwind right now. Iran, the Ayatollah, has a fatwa, which is a rule that we will never have nuclear weapons. And they are enriching it just to give us adjective. Because everybody that has a nuclear power plant has the bomb factory. There's this really stupid treaty, the Non-Proliferation Treaty. So five countries agreed, the U.S., Russia, China, England, and France, this was in 1970, to make good faith efforts for nuclear disarmament. That was the language. And to sweeten the pot and get everybody else to sign, they gave them an inalienable right to peaceful nuclear power. That's the keys to the bomb factory. And everybody signed except Israel, India, and Pakistan, and they got their bombs. North Korea signed, had their nuclear power, and left and started to enrich. And, you know, we probably could have stopped them. I mean, Trump, the broken clock that's right twice a day. He wanted to make a deal with North Korea. So he said, okay, we'll sign the treaty. We've had a ceasefire since 1952. We do military games on their border with, you know, I mean, we're sanctioned them. We've starved them. So he's dealing with Kim Il-sung and says, okay, I'll sign the treaty that ends the war. And I'll say that we won't do military exercises on your border if you say you'll never get nuclear weapons. And he agreed to that deal. And Trump also said, I'll take back 10,000 of the 38,000 U.S. troops that are stationed in South Korea on your border. And he goes back to Congress and they won't let him. He couldn't make that deal, which they should have let him. And then Kim got his nuke. Kim got his nuke. Iran's not getting a nuke. They're just threatening it. As a matter of fact, to sweeten the pot for Saudi Arabia and this horrible Gaza genocide, Trump offered them nuclear power without inspections. I mean, if you get nuclear power, you're subject to the IAEA comes to make sure you're not making it into bombs. We were going to give it to them free and clear. I think they have minerals that we want. They have minerals for this AI, which is going to doom us all. I don't know where even to start with AI, what kind of guardrails we need on it, you know. I mean, yeah, well, that's what I'm talking about now. Basically, I'm talking about space and new world war. I mean, David is brilliant. He's so wonderful. He wrote Dennis Kucinich's speech. He was his speechwriter. Remember Dennis Kucinich? He was the only peace candidate we ever had. And then the Democrats redistricted him. He was a member of Congress from Ohio, and he didn't win the presidential. I worked for him, and he didn't win it. And they redistricted the Democratic Party so that Marcy Kaptur got his votes, and he got only Republicans, and he didn't even get reelected back to Congress. That's the Democrats. I mean, I call them Republicrats. If you're for abortion and gay rights, all right, the Democrats will help you, you know, but forget about when it comes to big money and big pharma and military, they're in bed. They're so corrupt. They're all corrupt. Not only that, but Biden and Clinton and Obama really did horrible things to the working class people. Clinton ended welfare as I know it. You know, Hillary Clinton, when she was running for president, was calling these working guys the deplorables. I mean, they felt they needed Trump. You know, he was appealing to their whatever. I mean, we're in terrible trouble, but the Democrats earned it. And Kamala Harris, I mean, she was the least liked debater when they had those Democratic debates with Butch, you know, they were, and then everybody got off and they said, okay, it's Biden. Who put Clarence Thomas on the court and did terrible things to that, black woman? I forgot her name. Who was the woman, that was, you know, that Clarence Thomas put down? I can't remember. I'm getting old. So anyway, but I don't know. We need a general strike. I mean, the best news in America right now is my city, New York. We elected this wonderful Zoran Mandani. There were like 50,000 kids going door to door and 3 million phone calls. And a lot of Trump voters, you know, got it because he was talking to Trump voters and said, why'd you vote for him? And they felt that he was more caring about their problems. Their affordability was the issue. And he ran on affordability, you know, and he's coming across. He's doing it. He's terrific.
Candidate, if they're given a good reason, if that candidate makes a compelling case, And obviously he did, certainly, and compared to Andrew Cuomo. pretty amazing.
Oh, well, Cuomo was Cuomo had Andrew to resign. Cuomo resigned it in shame, and then he's running again. And all the billionaires are paying for. We're on the edge of a plutocracy. I mean, we got to get a hold of this. You know, I mean, our tax structure is crazy. You know, the American dream is everybody can be a millionaire. So I used to say after your first million, but people say, oh, a million is nothing anymore. I said, okay, after your first 999 million, give it back. Nobody said you could be a billionaire. Oh, are we having trouble? Yes.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you can hear me. I'm not sure they can hear me here, but... No, no, I can't. Yeah, go keep talking, Alice, because they can't hear me.
All right.
Go ahead.
I wanted to say the president of China was very interesting. About 2 years ago, said that capitalism was very good for us. It created a lot of jobs. It got a lot of people out of poverty. But it's getting out of hand, and I'm cutting it off. You know, like you can't earn. This is what we should do here. We should put a cap on, you know, no billionaires. Should I keep? Do you really want me to keep talking?
Let's see. Let's see. Yeah, Alice, I just wanted to get back here to, where do we go from here? We're talking about Ukraine or Russia, and of course, nothing seems to be happening with Ukraine and Russia at this point in time. You know, I heard someone on Tom Hartman several weeks back saying, Ukraine is winning this war decisively. And then every other person I hear say it's virtually over. Ukraine is more or less done by now. So where are we right now with Ukraine and Russia?
It's very clear when Gorbachev was so upset about United Germany going back into NATO, Reagan said, don't worry, let them come into NATO, and we give you our word, we will not expand NATO 1 inch to the east. And these were promises that were given to Russia. And Clinton came in, first of all, we bombed Kosovo over the UN veto by Russia. And should I keep talking?
Yes. We definitely want you to keep talking.
Because I hear you talking. Okay, anyway, Clinton expanded NATO, and then Obama kept going, and it went right up. And at one point, Putin even asked Clinton if Russia could join NATO because they felt very menaced by this military alliance coming closer to their borders. And we said no. And he put in, this is my red line, Ukraine cannot join NATO because they have a 600-mile border with them. I mean, imagine if Mexico or Canada was in a Russian military alliance. We wouldn't stand for it. As a matter of fact, when they put missiles in Cuba, we almost had World War III.
Well, Alice, I really, really appreciate you being available today. I know that you're incredibly active with all these different organizations, and there's so much that's happening. We need people like you who've seen quite a bit. You know, as you said, you're 87 years old, and you've been an activist way back when Eugene McCarthy ran against Lyndon Johnson. And so I think in my mind, and I'm sure in your mind, it's a tragic situation just looking at what's going on all over the world. And of course, the U.S. Congress, there's never any cutbacks in the military budget. It keeps increasing and increasing, and Democrats, Republicans, as you said, they're one and the same when it comes to voting in new budgets and increasing it and finding things. You know, I remember a few years ago there was some big destroyer that was going to be developed, and the Defense Department said they didn't need it. I mean, how does this continue? Why don't any Congress people stand up and say enough is enough?
They're all bought. They're getting paid by them. And I have a friend, Ray McGovern. He's a former CIA agent. He used to brief Bush and Clinton. Now he's in the peace movement. When he left, he formed VIPs, Veterans Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. And he says to people, it's not the military-industrial complex that Eisenhower warned about. It's the Mickey Mat. I said, Ray, what's the Mickey Mat? The military, industrial, congressional, intelligence, media, academic, think tank complex. They're all in bed. They're crafting a message. The people are totally brainwashed. I have friends and family that don't believe a word I'm saying. If you read the New York Times, if you watch CBS, I mean, now you can see how awful what happened to CBS, but it wasn't good before. And, people are getting the wrong message, and that's why we can't stop the wars. This whole Ukraine thing is insane. Ukraine, Putin has his red line. Don't let Ukraine go into NATO. He said that before the war. He put down a draft treaty where Ukraine would not go in NATO. We helped do a coup d'etat in 2014, before he invaded, and we overthrew the government, Ukrainian government, that was supporting the Russian economic market instead of the EU, because Russia was offering them a better deal. And we helped overthrow their government. We put in this right wing.
Boris Johnson went ahead. They sent him over the meet with Zelensky and told him, "Don't sign this. Don't sign this. We're going to help you. We're going to give you everything you need. We're going to take care of Russia for you." So when you look back at it, isn't it more than outrageous? It's a crime, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's secretly that we've been helping them all along, the CIA. We've been fighting Russia. And that was Biden. That wasn't just Trump.
I know.
So anyway, you know, I mean, it's the whole rotten establishment. That's why when you see someone like Zoran.
Well, I'm going to let you go, Alice. I really appreciate you being on today. And keep up the great work, because we need you. And we need so many people to get involved, that's for sure.
Is your thing working now? Is it working?
Yes. You can hear me, right?
Yes. Oh.
Different microphone here so that I can be heard on the air. You were heard right along. So I really appreciate it. And I'll look forward to your emails with the network for against weapons in space. I always enjoy reading your commentary.
Thank you. I just hope that we can get the word out that there are opportunities that aren't being reported. And the thing about Ukraine, this is baloney. We have to say that they won't go into NATO and then the war will end. Putin will end it. That's his red line. We're not meeting that.
Right.
So.
Well, we're going to put Pete Seeger on right now. Which side are you on? So thank you so much, Alice.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? They say in Harlan County there are no neutrals there. You'll either be a Union man
a thug for J.H. Blair. Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Tell me, which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? My daddy was a miner, and I'm a miner's son. He'll be with you, fellow workers, until this battle's won. Tell me, which side are you on? Which side are you on? Sing it! Which side are you on? Which side are you on? Oh, workers, can you stand it? Tell me how you can. Will you be a lousy scab, or will you be a man? Which side are you on? Which side are you on? Tell me, which side are you on? Which side are you on? You I'll tell of how the good old Union has come in here to dwell. Tell me, which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Tell me, which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on?
Yeah, Pete Seeger, which side are you on? I think we have to decide which side we're on. But it's, you know, I think a key here is to find people that you trust, find people who are giving you the facts and giving you all the different viewpoints around issues of the day. Because, you know, if there are some people, all they listen to is one news source, and they hear that slanted view that the mainstream has been dictated to by corporate America, by the pharmaceutical industry, by the military-industrial complex. And, hey, they want you to hear one specific line of thinking. They want you to make you believe that we need to be protecting all these small countries around the world, the ones that have those valuable resources, the oils and the diamonds and the minerals. And hey, let's protect them. Forget about all the others, because they don't have enough. They don't warrant our protection. As a matter of fact, why don't we just bring them into a situation where they have problems in their country, and then we can get we can send arms to the people who are revolting against the government. So anyway, I'm no expert, as you know. I just know what I hear. I know the good thing is I have the opportunity to have guests on the show like Bruce Gagnon, David Swanson, Medea Benjamin, Alice Slater today, who have the viewpoint that the U.S. and is creating more problems than they're solving around the world. So it's as I said to Alice, it's much more than tragic; it's criminal. So with everything that I just said, I'm going to sign off now, and Tom Walker will be having his version of the Peace and Justice Report next Wednesday from 9 to 10. And stay tuned for Democracy Now! Will be coming right up at 10 a.m. And I hope you have a good day and a nice, beautiful sunshine with a little cold air. So long for now.